Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex. And of course, I'm here with host number dose, Mr. KC Clapp.
Hello, everyone.
KC, we got some exciting news from our friend Tobin this morning.
Yes, we did.
Can we reveal what's happening on this podcast?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, might as well.
Do you think he has a problem with that?
No, I don't think so. Wow, actually, I just finished reading the message. Sounds great.
Oh, okay.
Let's do it.
Well, Tobin, our friend Tobin, is starting a podcast.
Yes, which is going to be a lovely show, and I cannot recommend it enough. I can't recommend it right now. It hasn't come out, but I'm excited about it.
Sure.
So I'm excited to recommend it early.
Yes, it's a show about trees. Well, and a really exciting part, Casey, is that you were interviewed for Tobin. This is Tobin Jews Love Trees.
Yes, exactly. Tobin Bennick, the...
Yeah. And you were interviewed for his show, and we're excited to hear you on there.
Yeah, it's going
to
come out, I think next week, on the 21st.
Oh, wow. That's a quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Dang. Coincidentally, it's my birthday.
How about that, Casey? Yeah.
So anyway, look
perfect
forward to
synergy.
It really is. It really is.
And he just locked a guest on his podcast that we are... We had mixed reactions to. We're very excited for him, but also we were a little... what's the word? I mean, not jealous, but
incredulous.
Like, maybe a little, maybe a touch, because of our personal experience with this guest.
Which is that he's paid us zero money for all of our endorsements. We're very upset.
It's David Allen Sibley.
Yeah, so we'll see. He's been in communication, so who knows? We'll see if maybe we can do something with him.
Yeah, I mean, we got to get Tobin, who is officially emailing with David, to say, David, drop what you're doing and email back completely arbitrary.
Stop emailing me. Do it with these guys.
Oh yeah, this will be great. It's like a sting operation. Like David Allen Sibley shows up to the Zoom call, and it's you and me.
Hi.
Wearing Tobin masks.
David. Our voices have modulation on it.
Yeah. You're now going to be recording an episode of Completely Arbitrary.
We got you now. Yeah, that's going to be great.
Well, speaking of, good luck to Tobin out there. Good luck to all the Tobins out there.
Yep.
We're really excited for him. He's a good friend of ours. He's a lovely man, and he deserves all the success that his intellect and humor will eventually bring him.
That's very true.
I shouldn't say eventually. It's plenty successful now.
It's already happened. The guy wrote a book. Oh my God.
Someday he might find success. Casey, we have got a great tree to talk about today.
You know what I want to call it before we go too far?
What do you want to call it?
Sweet neem.
I've heard this, Casey.
I love that so much better than curry leaf tree.
Yeah, the other common name is curry leaf tree.
Yeah.
Sweet neem would also be good for us because last week we talked about neem proper.
Correct.
Vanilla neem, which is
Now, don't be confused.
Margosa.
that is in contrast to kinky neem.
No.
But it does not taste like vanilla. It's like we can't put these words together because they have too many meanings that are too accurate.
I use vanilla meme as a meme. Neem. I use vanilla in terms of World of Warcraft, like the original. Before all of the variations.
I see. Right? Not in terms of like, oh, you're so vanilla.
Right. Not in terms of boring sex.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay.
You never know. Casey, that's right. Today we are talking the curry leaf tree, or the sweet neem, as you called it.
That's right. Muriana coenigii.
A very interesting scientific name. We've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking about food as medicine. We're going to be talking about Indian cuisine. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about, and I'm putting this in quotes, curry.
Oh, I noticed you put that in quotes, Alex.
That's right.
Huh.
And I can't wait to tell you why.
I can't wait to hear. In fact, you did not tell me why before we started this.
That's right. This is going to be new to everyone.
This is all going
to
be live.
Except like Indians.
Except for, you know, 1/7 of the world.
But we got to talk about all of it after a break. We will be right back with Completely Arbitrary. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons, and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning, you speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription. But only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin', those people are a-walkin' around, that sun is a-shinin', and it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar, and that time rolls around and you think, I got to drive all the way across town. I am not going to go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking the curry leaf tree, aka the sweet neem tree.
That's right.
Aka scientific name?
Mariana Koenigii.
Mariana Koenigii.
Yes, which is, as I'm sure you're about to guess, the worst possible name you could ever come up with.
I prefer to call it by its Jewish name, Murray Koenig.
I think that'd be right. Murray. Hi, I'm Murray Koenig. I just want to be inside of your curry.
I just want to be inside.
I love that.
Oh, Casey.
His Jewish name, which is just take all the Latin away and it becomes just Murray Koenig.
It does sound like a very Jewish scientific name.
Yeah, it really does. It's named after these two guys, Murray and Koenig, and it has nothing to do with the tree. It's again, one of those frustrating things you're just shaking your head about.
Well, Casey, let's imagine that you and I are walking through the subtropical/tropical subcontinent of India.
I am so happy you asked, Alex.
And we come across some of these curry leaf trees, so-called. Also say sweet neem.
Yes.
I would like to land on one, maybe.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I say we land on sweet neem, personally.
Well,
mostly so I can have the exclamation, sweet neem.
I love that, which now might be the episode title.
Right.
But I also love curry leaf tree because it has to do with my big reveal at the end of this episode.
Which is very true. Now, in Hindi, it's kadi pata.
Yes.
So there's also that.
Yes. Okay, let's go with sweet neem.
It's just the most fun. Sorry, everyone who is like really looking forward to listening to us, you know, say Hindi words this whole time.
Sweet neem.
Yeah, Batman. Anyway.
Casey, let's ID this tree.
All right. Now, this is in the rue family. You'll recognize the rue family because you will recognize citrus as being in the rue family, Rutaceae.
Oh, R-U-E?
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, that is a family of a lot of big, nice tropical trees. But before we go too far, I just remembered something that's been just bugging me.
Oh, wow.
Why do we keep calling India a subcontinent?
We've talked about this.
We have?
In fact, we talked about it two episodes ago,
No,
I think.
We did not.
Yes, we did.
We talked about it as like the fact that it is this what used to be its own big island continent,
yes,
not smashed into Asia.
That's why we call it a subcontinent.
We need to stop doing that.
It's been, 37 million years.
So why don't we just refer to Africa and South America as like half continents, you know? Like, I get it. I understand where it comes from, but it is just so far not a subcontinent. Like,
I mean, you could also say sub as in below. Like, it's at the bottom of the continent.
I guess that's fine. It's also like Europe, where Europe is its own continent for strictly
very silly
just nepotism.
Yeah.
Like, they're all one giant landmass.
Is there anything more Western-centric than calling Europe its own continent?
No, there is not. There absolutely is not.
Yeah. So this is in the rue family, which shares familial ties with all citrus.
Yes, exactly.
All right, exciting.
Now, as you also are aware, that usually is because of the fruit and or the flower, the sexual parts of plants.
Yes.
How we separate them out. When you look at this flower, you'll be like, oh, dang, yeah, that looks quite similar to what you'd expect to see from a citrus plant.
They're kind of small, white.
Yeah.
Is it five petaled?
I believe so, yeah.
And sort of, it has like, I would say in terms of flowers, it has very deep lobes, or maybe just very narrow petals.
Yeah. I think that's a better way to describe it.
Yeah. It's like they're not, the petals aren't like overlapping like a rose or like a dahlia or whatever.
And they're not fused together. They're very much singular entities.
Yes.
Yeah.
They look like little bees' wings.
Yeah. They're really gorgeous. They apparently smell quite delightful. I, unfortunately, to my chagrin, have not been able to experience this tree in my own world, though I have found out I very much can, and I would like to.
Can how?
Well, it is tropical and subtropical.
Can how?
Oh, my. Sorry. But it is, you can just buy it, you can put it in a pot, you can keep it in your yard, you put it in during the wintertime, take it back out.
How about that?
It's essentially a houseplant in waiting, and people do this all the time.
I would love to have a curry leaf tree in my home.
Yeah, I think you would too. You can have curry and coffee, which I think would be kind of fun, even though I don't know if this coffee plant's going to ever make any, traditional coffee berries.
True. Yeah. I think it's too stunted. It's going through a really hard time.
It is. It's having a hard day.
And asking it to grow coffee is like after you have a family tragedy and somebody's like, so when are you going back to work? Yeah. Like, that's the last thing on my mind.
Quickly, could you run a marathon tomorrow? we just need one more body out there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you say that maybe I could have curry.
Yeah.
And I'm going to rub my chin and say, oh,
yeah, you're right. Okay.
Can I?
Oh, shoot.
But that comes later.
Well, we'll finish talking about what people would use if they were making a curry with this plant, because it has nothing to do with the little white flowers that are in these big panicles, these big cymes, these ends of the branches. You have these big poof white flowers that come out in these big groups. Those then turn into these adorable small black drupes that are very shiny and apparently have a very sweet flavor to the flesh. But the seed itself is probably toxic, so just don't worry about that.
I'll say that the seed or the fruit itself looks a little toxic.
Yes, right? But apparently it's very good. Tastes very nice.
Interesting.
Very sweet. Now, we are calling this the sweet neem tree, but it is not in any way related to the other neem that we talked about just last week in a different family. That one is in Meliaceae. So this tree, you can tell the difference between because it has pinnately compound leaves that are alternately arranged.
And if you remember, the Margosa has oppositely arranged leaves.
Precisely. Mm. And that is your quickest way to tell them apart. Also, of course, one has very nice, sweet smelling and sweet tasting fruit. Mm-hmm. The other's fruit is very bitter and awful, and you'd squeeze it to get this nice oil out of it. The oil, of course, smells and tastes not quite nice. So, these leaves, they generally have 11 to 21 leaflets, is what I've read. And essentially what that means is they have pairs along the side of these pinnately compound leaves and then one central leaflet right at the very end.
Is that a terminate leaf?
That would be a terminal leaflet.
Oh, yes. Sure.
Yeah, I think that'd be fair.
Terminal, now, not terminate.
Exactly, because some plants actually don't have a terminal one. They actually just have pair, done.
Little nub at the end.
Yeah, exactly. It's just it just looks like it's lost its top.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing, the final bit, I know this kind of feels like we're doing this backwards, but I like this as a reveal. This is like not usually a traditional sized tree.
Now, I'm glad you're talking about this.
I was expecting that you would notice.
It's a little shrub-like, Casey.
Yeah, it's a little shrubby.
How dare we?
Yeah, I know, but so I've thought about this. We've talked about a lot of things that we consider trees and what we don't consider trees, and this I decided to call a tree because of almost a very specific reason. I went back and forth, and I was like, you know what?
Wow.
They call it a tree. In the vernacular, it is described as a tree. Okay, we're gonna go with that. That's
right.
Gonna be one reason to push it towards that category.
Like,
right?
In its common name, curry leaf tree is its entire name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if the vernacular of the people who use it say, yeah, this is a tree, I'm gonna be like, hey, cool, it's a tree. Whatever.
Right.
I'm going with you. Otherwise, this tree, if you just leave it alone, it will actually grow taller than other plants that we've covered.
Wow.
Like, you know, 25, 30 feet. Like, it's not huge by any definition.
But that is a tree.
That'll get you there.
Uh-huh.
And it actually will grow that way if you just kind of leave it alone. It may grow a couple other sprouts and stems, but the vine maple will do that, very often considered a tree. The Japanese maple, same thing.
Yeah. Your
hazelnuts all grow in the same way, many multiple stems coming up. They may get 15, 20 feet tall, but very rarely do. So you kind of like, where are we going to go? Do we really want to draw a line arbitrarily here for no good reason while everyone else in the world just says, yeah, this is a tree? No, you don't want to do that.
Arbitrary is our middle name.
Exactly. It's what we do.
So we've landed on calling it a tree, clearly.
Yes. And it actually generally stays not tree-like and is kept as a shrub for a very specific reason.
I bet I know why.
Why?
Harvesting.
Yes. As you would expect, many humans are not 15 to 20 feet tall.
Many.
Many are not. I don't want to say how many are, but let's just keep that on down low. So yeah, if you are collecting the curry leaves from this curry leaf tree, you are going to be putting them in curries. I have the quotes now too, just because I don't want to be wrong in the future.
I will say putting them in should also be in quotes.
Oh God. Okay. Well, now everything is, I have no idea where this is going. Regardless, if you use these leaves in any culinary dish,
there you go.
You would want to, of course, pick them at a height that's reasonable for you. So the other thing is they don't put on new leaves lower down, so they will tend not to sprout. If you just let them grow and you pull off some of their leaves, then they'll just put new leaves up the way trees do at the top where their growing tip is. So it'll grow up, put out a leaf, 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 so on and so forth. And it doesn't necessarily put out new sprouts from the lower sections of the trunk.
Okay.
If you prune off the top or you clip it down or you cause some amount of reduction in the stem, it will then put out new shoots from underneath that pruning cut, and then it'll maintain itself as this low bushy shrub. So I think a lot of people understand it as a low bushy shrub because if you just use it and you're constantly taking bits away from it, management keeps them low.
I see.
But if you just let it grow in its natural environment, just doing its thing, you're not using it for culinary purposes, I think it will get up to be a reasonably sized small tree.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So it's in the bush category is like, well, humans make it a shrub.
I think so. For more often than not.
Okay.
Yes.
But in its heart, deep down, it is a tree.
It is a tree. But I think it likes to keep both feet on either side of that line.
Clever.
Because it's obviously good at living that way anyway.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a little bit of what I wanted to talk about today is which came first. We call this the curry leaf tree. Many people say, really, it's, you know, you should really call it a shrub. We manage it low, so we have this perception of how this tree grows. When it doesn't necessarily naturally grow that way, that's just how we always see it because that's how we always interact with it. Same thing as with the arborvitae. Many people are like, you know, arborvitae doesn't actually grow the way most people expect. That is a variety.
Right.
That's how we mostly interact with it. You could think of 10,000 different examples, but it just goes to show that how people manage their trees and how their interactions with them, how they manifest in terms of our understanding and perceptions of that tree.
Interesting.
So we see a tree and we interact with it as a tree. We see a shrub, we interact with it as a shrub.
Right.
We may never know that if you just leave that shrub, it will grow into a tree. And if you just prune on that tree, it will stay a shrub.
Interesting.
Kind of fun. Now, just to end it, because it stays as a shrub bark, it's really not important. Every now and then you'll see it. It kind of looks a little bit tree of heaven-like, in my opinion.
Oh, no.
Nothing too exciting. Very smooth, a little bit of chips in it here and there kind of stuff. Nothing too great. But again, most of the time it stays very small, so the bark doesn't become a real big, important aspect of it.
Sure.
So
I guess I've never thought about that. Like, bark needs time to mature.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And even, you know, small trees will mature and develop a unique bark. Lilacs are a great example. It gets very shaggy. But oftentimes we just don't see them getting that large for, you know, whatever reason. But that's our tree. If you're walking around in India, you're probably going to find this tree almost everywhere. Also, there's now apparently many plantations down in Australia. But it's a tropical, subtropical tree, so you're not going to find it growing everywhere. Only in these nice certain belts. and very likely around where people are living who are using it culinarily, because it is, oh my God, one of the most important culinary trees out there. I have read some things that say this is the most important culinary tree.
Wow.
In India.
That's amazing.
I've never been to India, and I have not asked so far what an Indian person's perspective is on this. Mm-hmm. So if you are in any of those categories, please let us know. There you have it. So I think this is a tree that you would be happy to find, especially because even if you just like brush up next to it, or you kind of like break one of the leaves, you crush it a little bit, it apparently is so fragrant right off the bat, just like the neem, which is one of those things that you can find consistently through almost every culture, every tree that has some amount of either real and actual use, where someone says, yes, that tree does this, or it's a tree that has some kind of perceived very good use. Historically, if this tree like had some weird thing to it, some intense smell or odor or something like that,
yeah,
it was usually in the culture that it grew up with. The culture would be like, oh, that tree is really important. It has these certain qualities that, you know, give you this, give you that. So it's kind of upgraded on the medicinal scale. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that is interesting. I thought about this before of like, you know, it's almost like an attention grabber.
Yeah.
Like a hook. Like,
totally.
Hey, look at this. I smell really, really strong. Did you know that I can do all of these things?
Oh.
And it makes me wonder how many plants or trees out there have we just not experimented with because they don't have any particular big grabby smell or taste, you know?
Interesting.
But they could be hidden gems. They could be medicinal wonder plants. We just don't know.
See, I also think that because I just don't know if we've asked the right people who have done that kind of test, you know?
Oh, sure.
We've just completely annihilated them, so we never asked the questions beforehand. So back to our tree at hand. It is a tree that is kind of stunning to me because I kind of like, you know, researched into it and I was like, okay, what exactly is going on? And this is a tree that has realms of influence very much in India for sure, but also in all the cultures that border India and all the cultures that border them, as the kind of ingredient, which is the leaf of this plant, very mostly has sort of diffused out, either agriculturally speaking, where we would start to plant it elsewhere and use it in different foods. But as you get it further away, the food systems kind of change. And I'll give you an example.
Okay.
The empire made by Alexander the Great covered the space from Greece, from Macedonia, to India. Right there.
Like, wow.
Literally that entire section. He did it all before he was 30, blah, blah, blah. Grand Alexander. Anyway.
I haven't done anything.
No, but you know what? You know what the difference is? He inherited a spectacular machine from his dad. So he's don't give him that much credit.
Machine.
Yes. Yeah, a war machine. Sorry. So Alexander had this base from Greece to India, which when you consider it, you look on a map, you're like, well, actually, that's kind of, I can see how that works. But there is no gigantic thing like an ocean that separates the two.
Sure.
So someone could carry this leaf all the way across, and it's used in all these different cuisines this entire time. Mm-hmm. But they use it a little bit differently. But I think that the reason I think this tree has garnered the attention that it has, you can Google things, and it is like so popular. Everyone's like, 10 things you didn't know about this tree, 10 things over here, blah, blah, blah. Like, it is a pop culture phenomenon.
Definitely. It's not even just like culinarily. I just feel like anybody who even is familiar with food, which is i.e. all of us, it knows that like the curry leaf is like an ingredient.
Exactly. Especially if they're trying to make like a really good, like authentic kind of meal.
Yeah.
You know, like I have a good friend who puts together his own curries. And so he like has a greenhouse that he grows all these certain plants in. And he's like, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I think
you gotta introduce me to this guy.
I will as well. His name's Thomas. Shout out Thomas Van Hevelingen.
Oh, I know Thomas.
Yeah, he's the person I do on all my crazy bike things.
Yeah.
With. Yeah. So, but I was reading through and I was just kind of stunned about all the different health things that come along with this tree.
Please tell me some.
Well, it has a lot of properties and compounds inside of it that are very good for us. So one example is vitamin C. It's got a lot of vitamin C in it. So it'll help get rid of scurvy if you have it. It will also help with antibacterial, anti-inflammatory properties. Mm. So if you eat it, then it will help to calm inflammation.
Yeah.
It adds flavor to everything, which again, this goes back to the interactions we have. Does the culture create the tree and the shrub, i.e. we prune it and keep it into a shrub? Or is it a shrub and then we just kind of use it and the tree informs the culture, so now we grow this shrub everywhere and we use it in everything?
Yeah.
Kind of happens like this, where it became ubiquitous in almost all these different recipes. And each recipe also does things like relieve the symptoms of diarrhea or help with digestion. It helps protect you against heart disease because it has it's an antioxidant.
Mm.
So it has all these little tiny things in like certain proportions that work very well for our body as something that we ingest, which I should contrast against neem, where neem you could often put on your skin as a treatment or on your plants. Something like that. This, you're always eating it. It's always
right.
An ingredient to go within you. And then your body uses that in almost every part of your body. Like I've read things, which, you know, a couple of them I'm like, well, this seems like a bit of a dubious claim. But then others are fairly reasonable. There is one thing that's going to be in our show notes is a scientific article that talks about carbazole alkaloid. I think that's how you pronounce
carbazole?
It.
Carbazole?
It might be carbazole alkaloid.
What is that?
So it is a compound in the leaves of our tree, Muriana coniggii,
mm-hmm.
and it has wild amounts of different things that it does in terms of pharmacological activity.
Hmm.
So it does things that are helping you remain healthy. It does things like give you what I was just talking about, a lot of vitamin C. It has anti-cancer activity going on, antifungal, antibacterial, antiprotozoal, which is something else that I'd never really thought too much about. So if those other organisms are getting into you and causing you trouble, it will help with that.
Okay.
It will help with anti-inflammation. It has vitamin C in it.
Wow.
It helps reduce blood pressure. It relieves cholesterol. And on top of this, it's involved in Ayurveda, which is what we talked about last week. And this is my favorite part. It balances all the doshas.
Oh my God.
Yeah, isn't that great?
We finally found it. The dosha balancer, the one that will bring harmony to the force.
It is your curry leaf plant. Your sweet neem, baby.
Your what?
Your sweet neem.
Oh, I thought you said something completely different.
Oh, sorry.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. Okay. This is sort of Casey, you just kind of blew my mind. I was sitting there in wonder.
Yeah. In fact, it's also, here's the thing that I really love. I found an article that said, in Ayurveda, it's believed that the Kadipada, which is the Hindi name for this,
mm-hmm.
has a mild laxative property, but it also helps relieve diarrhea.
Yeah.
Because it helps reduce inflammation.
Okay.
So it does a little bit on both ends.
Yeah.
In a literal and figurative sense. So you'll be at one end, it's like, all right, hey, let's move it through. Come on, let's get going. Yeah, and the other end says, hey, slow it down. Relax.
Right.
Let's just take this one step at a time. The train's moving though, so we're just going to let this go at the right speed.
It's part corralling the people, and then the other part is getting them all in single file line.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And it's stunning. So it does all that. And of course, it's also, as I was talking about before, it has a very important place in Unani medicine, which is kind of in the Arabian Peninsula area.
Unani, okay.
Yeah. It's another traditional kind of medicine tradition.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I can use tradition to define traditional.
I think that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
System, I've also heard, a traditional medicine system.
There you go. That's a better, I think, descriptor.
Yeah.
And so I would be willing to bet if you go further east from India, you're also going to find it over there in the Southeast Asian cultures in their food as well, doing the same exact stuff.
Big time. Wow.
Exactly. And just to end this with a nice little Alexander the Great, little callback.
Can't wait.
The Unani medicine tradition has bases that, or at least has a lot of influence from ancient Greek culture and people like Hippocrates. You're familiar?
I know hey, you've tried the oath.
Now get the curry. Exactly. So that is what the Hippocratic Oath is. It's like what the base fundamental oath that you have to take as a doctor before you're knighted or whatever.
Yeah, don't purposefully hurt your patients.
Exactly. You are always doing this for the good of your patient. You must do that.
Okay.
So he was a essentially like one of the first doctor kind of people who started writing things down and started keeping track of what medicines were being used in his culture. Of course, everyone else was using a thousand different things as medicines in their culture. As we already said, food is medicine. This is the perfect example of that. But why Hippocrates gets this is because they wrote it down. Then the Romans were like, oh, Greeks, whatever. And then they didn't really care about it. A couple hundred years later, we had this enlightenment in quotes in the Europe. Places, and they said, "Oh, what were these Greeks talking about?" And then they went down to Greece and read all these things. They're like, "Wow, these guys were like really ahead of their time." You know how people all the time say things about the Dark Ages, and
yeah.
So now everyone's like, "That's the most ridiculous thing." So Eurocentric, because maybe Europe was in the Dark Ages. Who was it at the time that was like moving medicine and science forward? Like mostly that would have been in the same realm.
India.
Yes, and also the Arabs.
The realm geographically.
Yes,
excuse me.
Yeah. So this medicine, this traditional medicine, when Europe was in its darkest age, they were just blossoming into this other thing.
Interesting.
So it all kind of comes back about how these cultures have mixed, and because we have this centricism over on this western side of this giant one singular continent, we are now you can see how, okay, when the wheels fall off of your cart over there, they're still going just fine over here.
Yeah.
And then we develop these things, and now Hippocrates, all of that stuff is now Western science as well, but it has the same basic kind of traditional start that we have in all of the other Eastern traditional medicines as well, at least certainly the India and Arabian kind of varieties. I cannot speak for medicine systems further to the East because I don't know how much they used this particular plant.
Interesting.
But like I said, I'm sure they had some.
Wow, Casey. Can I just say, it's fucking... Drink some water.
Okay, thank you.
Take a literal chill pill. There's only one thing I don't like about Hippocrates, and that's, you know, he would tell you to do one thing, but he would do another.
Yeah, he always would. Yeah, he was a real hypocrite.
Wow! All right, Casey. So I would like to just paint a big asterisk on all this.
What?
And tell you a little bit about...
I'm sorry. You can't just put an asterisk.
I put an asterisk on your life.
All of my work. How could you?
No, not at all. It's
hi, everyone. This is Casey. There's an asterisk. Say no.
Hosted by Casey Clapp, asterisk, and Alex Trosen. So, Casey, as you know, I am I'm a big fan of good food.
Mm-hmm.
I like to explore food and try new foods, and I'm a big culinary head. I refuse to call myself a foodie because that's the most cringy shit ever.
And so you choose culinary head.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a culinary head.
Huh. All right, I'm gonna
bit of a food dude.
Let's gonna stick with that.
I like food dude. Yeah. Casey, we decided to talk about the curry leaf tree.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, that sounds exciting. I'm gonna do some research for that and talk about curry.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the history of, maybe like regional differences, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But this is like somebody saying, oh, I think that frog is pretty cool. I'm going to get a master's degree in biology, right?
Okay.
And it's like, well, there's a lot more to biology than just that frog.
Just that frog right there.
And you start opening books and you're like, oh, there's more than a frog. Oh, there's, there's all these ones. Oh, then there's mammal. Oh, but wait, biology just means life. Oh, there's a lot of different kinds of life. Oh, and how they all work together. Oh, and there's different life forms if you go to different places. So I have scratched the surface.
I was like, no, you went to all these different places. So I was researching curry, and now I need to talk to you about protozoan life forms.
I've just barely scratched the surface, and the deeper I got, the more I realized that I was just still in the shallow end.
Oh, man.
But here's the big thing. Curry powder
Yes.
is a not Indian.
Aha.
B, does not contain leaves from the curry leaf tree.
What? I thought it at least had that. No, okay, I have to admit, I did know that it is not Indian.
That curry powder is British.
Yes, and the reason I knew that is because it was all over British things whenever I was there in London for like 4 days one time. And like curry powder was like a very, it was always there. And they're like, yeah, we use curry powder in this. I'm like, isn't this like traditional English food? Why is there curry powder in
I know. You'll see like fish and chips with curry powder in the batter.
Yeah.
A lot of times. So yes, curry powder, not Indian, does not contain curry leaves. Curry powder is a spice blend of British origin, and it's based on a masala, which is an Indian, traditional Indian spice blend.
Now, and masala is like lowercase. That's generic where there's different sorts and types, right?
A masala is just a spice blend.
Gotcha.
There are many, many types of masalas. As many as there are, you know, this is sort of a sweeping generalization, but as many masalas as there are like households.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, because like each person makes their own sort. Maybe each region has their own kind of flavors they add in.
There are regional differences, and then it gets so granular that you're talking about like my mom's masala for this dish is different than your mom's masala for that same dish.
Gotcha. And now that also is going to change during times of year.
Yes, of course.
Oh, God. I see how you're like, well, I'm only in the shallow end.
So, yeah, curry powder is British.
Yeah.
Masala is what curry powder is sort of based on, but it's like Britishized for British tastes. Mm-hmm. Most specifically, the exclusion of chili.
Oh, that's so British. No offense,
I know, right?
But that's so British.
Well, yeah.
Hi, we want everything except take away the fun stuff.
Yeah, no spice, please.
Yeah, could we turn that right into just beans and cabbage?
That's maybe a sausage in there. Casey, garam masala.
Well, you can't even do it. You have currywurst, don't you? That's a sausage with curry
powder.
That's
right, Casey.
Oh, God. All right, Alex, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Continue.
I see what I mean about this scratching the surface. So, Casey, garam masala is probably the most popular, well-known masala spice blend. Yep. Also does not contain curry leaf.
What?
Yes. So curry leaves from the curry tree have nothing to do with what you and I call curry. And in fact, curry is sort of seen from some resources I've found, sort of seen as an offensive term.
No.
Because it is a British pronunciation and spelling of a Tamil, like Indian term.
Yeah.
That is a catch-all for, quote, Indian food. Any
really?
Indian food that contains a gravy. So like dal and curries and... Yeah. Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like all sorts of different kinds of this.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, that I think there's this sort of a British person will say like, yeah, let's get a curry. They might mean, let's just go to an Indian, a British Indian restaurant. So I might equate it to like crunchy hard shell tacos, like American tacos. You know, in the 90s, we'd say, let's have taco night. And it's like not even close to a traditional Mexican taco.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
Of course, still delicious, but not authentic, but just synonymous with Indian food, in quotes.
Gotcha. So if you went to India and you asked for a curry... They would
just like hold the pad and look at you waiting for more information.
I at least thought that was a reasonable term.
Well, a curry is a sort of a category of dish.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I also like really have always thought that you have to add Indian to Indian curry, because I have actually assumed curry as something that is more of a Thai kind of thing.
Well, there is Thai curry. There is Guyanese curry. There is Japanese curry.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure there's Korean curry. I'm sure there's...
This is a little much for me, Alex.
Filipino curry.
So you're saying that these... I mean, I guess I... So I, my brain knows this. Like, my brain is like, yeah, of course, there is. But my brain is also like, yeah, those must be completely different.
Yeah.
So it's just like a generic term for like... Gravy.
Well, curry is the English word based on the Tamil word kari, K-A-R-I, which means sauce.
Gotcha.
So any of these Indian dishes that has like some sort of sauce or gravy.
Yeah. Really want to be, I want to go for breakfast tomorrow and be like, hi, can I get some, you know what? I'd love your biscuits and curry. Can I get your biscuits and curry, please?
Yeah, that sounds
pretty American
good.
Sausage would be fine.
So curry leaves are not used in curries unless they are. And then you're talking Southern Indian cuisines, Casey.
Jeez.
But even then, as far as I know, they're used as a whole leaf. And the way that you and I might put like a big bunch of spinach in like a scramble right at the very end, right?
Yeah.
Or flavored with bay leaves, you know, like put this bay leaf in and let it simmer.
Let dudes think.
Do that with curry leaves. And they, you know, the dish will kind of get the essence.
Yeah.
The curry leaf is a very strong, very specific taste.
Yes. I have heard you want to do it as fresh as possible.
Yes.
If you dry it out, it'll still be there, but like way, way mellow.
Yeah.
Like almost non-existent, almost like pointless.
And also nothing I could find points at what the curry leaf actually tastes like. It's always, it always said over several things, it's unlike anything you've ever tried, or it's its own unique thing.
It always adds flavor.
Yes.
You know?
But I would assume because it's in the rue family that potentially it has a bit of a citrusy kind of taste.
Yeah, that would be my assumption as well. And I have also heard that you would put it in often at the very, very beginning. So you would put in some oil and you put in some onions and then you'd put that in. So it immediately starts to go. Then you add the rest of your ingredients. So it starts to really get going.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of Indian dishes start with the oil.
Yeah.
And then you basically fry your seasonings.
Yeah.
And then you add all the other stuff.
She's wild. I have made some curries, Indian curries, I should say, very specifically. Myself, it's one of my favorite dishes that I've learned to make this last year.
Wow.
And it has been just delight. But as I began this whole thing, it turns out I could be adding this leaf to it every single time.
That's right.
I just don't even know where to go buy one. So I need to go figure that out.
You need to go to the Indian market, my friend.
There's an Indian market here?
Of course, there are many.
Well, I have had no idea.
One of the most stressful experiences of my life, going to the Indian market. It was just sensory overload, very small, lots of people.
Okay.
So, Casey, I'm going to read you a list of two lists here.
Okay.
One is the traditional, I'm putting that in quotes, ingredients in curry powder.
Okay.
The other is traditional ingredients in garam masala.
Okay.
Here's curry powder, ginger, garlic, fennel, mace, which, as you'll remember, is the outer coating on a nutmeg.
That's right.
Cumin, coriander, cardamom, cinnamon, and turmeric.
That sounds so good.
And then garam masala, you're looking at fennel, Indian bay leaves, black and white peppercorn, cloves, cinnamon, cassia bark. Cassia? Do you know about cassia?
I do. Cassia is the not true cinnamon, isn't that correct?
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, that's the one. But then again, we did talk about, what is it, Ceylon cinnamon or Ceylon cinnamon?
Oh, yeah.
And that was considered, and now is scientifically named, Cinnamomum verum, which means the true cinnamon.
Oh, wow.
When in our cinnamon episode, we specifically noted that it was probably the cassia plant that had been traded between China and everywhere else for so long. It was only when it wasn't the Dutch, it was then the Portuguese, I think, who got a monopoly in Ceylon and then said, no, this is the true spice called cinnamon.
Marketing thing?
Yeah, so I think, exactly, it's all it is. So wow. I think I know exactly what you're talking about. But then again, also, what is truth? Today, Alex, I ask you.
Okay, let's not get into that.
Sorry.
Cardamom pods, cumin, coriander, red chili powder. So
look at that.
When I say masala, that's like a very wide ranging. It's basically in like ratios of spices the spices themselves.
Yeah.
And like I said, the variety comes down to like a household granularity.
Yeah, and honestly, I just love that that's the way it is. I think you can get the same thing in almost every place that has some traditional cooking that goes along with
it.
And unfortunately, the United States is not a good place for that, but also one of the best places because we've had such a melting pot of real people from real places who've brought their real traditions over, and those traditions are now kind of everywhere. Someone talked about this with Portland a while back. They were like, Portland is not a pizza city. But then someone else is like, it's actually the perfect pizza city because we have no pizza tradition of our own. Yeah. So we just take everybody else's and do it way better than they do. Sorry.
Holy shit.
Anyway, so then you get this like this, there's 1,000 really amazing pizza places you can go to in the city of Portland, none of which is Portland style pizza.
Right.
Whereas if there is, you know, all these traditional places, even like you're saying, amongst the communities and people who make their different garam masalas, there's the proportions, the ingredients, the exact things that you put in there from your thing. Oh, this is cassia as opposed to cinnamomum verum.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Isn't that great, Case? So yeah, basically here's my conclusion, my thesis.
Okay.
India is fucking huge, with many, many regions. All of these regions have a regional cuisine or one or more. All of those regional cuisines have a host of regional dishes. So curry is one type of dish with countless varieties, and we're talking regional traditions, religion, household preference, personal preference, ingredients, types of oil used, how the ingredients are prepared, protein choices, and how you eat the dish.
Like kind of with a spoon and rice, or like with naan or something like
that? Yes, exactly. Okay. Like what type of bread you use to eat it, or what, you know, do you eat it with your hands or with a utensil? So essentially there is, I like to think of it as like, I've been playing a lot of Starfield, the new RPG. So I've got space on the brain. I like to think of it as like, there's just a universe of curry.
It's even bigger.
Yeah.
This isn't a star system.
It like, you can keep looking deeper and deeper and deeper and finding more specific and hyper regionalized versions of what you and I call like a curry.
Oh, you know what? This to me is, it sounds like curries don't exist.
Wow. I wouldn't go that far.
I think I'm going to go that far. I'm going to do it because you can't, there is no cladistic curry. The very first curry, then all curries came from that curry.
Sure, yeah.
There is millions cladistic of different things that basically said, yeah, this is a curry. This is how you make a curry.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, no. That is not a curry because that's not related to this curry, which evolved its curriness all by itself.
I basically, after today, Casey, I now know how little I know.
Alex.
Which is a great place to be.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Welcome.
And my last little thing here. So right, Casey, when curry powder was named, it was named after the dish, not the thing that's actually in it. So my question to you is, what came first? Curry, the name of the curry leaf tree, or the dish of curry?
Huh. You know, I think that it was... Oh,
wow.
This is a hard one. So, okay, let's
like
walk.
I should be playing Jeopardy music.
We should, exactly. And then I'm just panicking as it gets longer and longer. All right, so if the name came first, then there should be 10,000 million different kinds of curry powder. You can get a curry powder from this, from that, from there, over here, from there, from that person's house, from that person's house.
Of curry powder.
Yes.
The Britishized curry powder.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Not masalas.
Not masalas, yeah. But,
something to think on, maybe hard. For the future.
All right.
It's like a philosophical brain
Which
teaser.
Which came first?
You know, you find a man hanging in a barn. There's nothing underneath him. Well, he stood on a block of ice.
What?
Remember that?
No.
All right. So there you go, Case.
Honestly, now I just want to go get some paneer.
I'm absolutely, after all this research, I'm absolutely having Indian tonight.
Yes, we did it.
And we encourage you, dear fungal associate, to go get some Indian food.
Yes.
And how about this, Casey? I'm going to try something I've not tried before.
What is that?
I don't know yet.
Oh,
but
I
usually
see,
get the
I
same
see.
Thing from the place I from a place I order Indian food.
Yes. I don't know what I haven't tried yet, so I'm going to go figure it out. I've done pretty much everything so far. So anyway.
Hey, that was our discussion on the curry leaf tree. We got to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to review it and then take a listener question. We will be right back with Completely Arbitrary. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed, and I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely Arbitrary listeners, a little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES, that's T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the curry leaf tree. Casey.
Alex, ready.
As is customary, as is traditional, I will say, here at Completely Arbitrary, it's time for our review. Here's how it works. We're going to give our final thoughts on this tree, then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident expert, will begin with you.
I appreciate the opportunity. Alex, I love spice. I love spicy things.
Wow.
And when I say spicy, I mean flavorful.
Sure.
I do not like hot, spicy things.
Ah.
I do not like to be sweating. I do not like my mouth to feel as if it is on fire, though I know in a technical sense it is not. It's just getting chemically burned.
You know what's interesting, Casey? Garam masala in Hindi means hot spices.
Really?
But it is not spicy.
It is not spicy.
And I think the hot is like, ooh, super flavorful, right?
Well, God, that is exactly
the way that you're describing.
What I'm into. Yeah, this makes sense because I like them. Well, I like them both because the traditional, or rather I should say untraditional curry powder is, it's also very delicious. I would do that and pepper, traditional, the pepper that you're thinking of when I say pepper. Because I love that flavor.
Like black peppercorn?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that this is actually a very, very interesting thing to come up with, because the one thing I have learned over my time eating things is that the more you can get that's fresh and real, the better it's going to get.
Sure.
And I mean, it's like everyone knows this about tomatoes, which is still why I'm stunned and just flabbergasted why you can ever still convince yourself to buy a tomato anywhere, is that if you get a tomato that is grown from a garden, from an organic farm, you name it, a farmer's market, you eat that tomato, it's 10 million times more flavorful and delicious than literally every tomato you've ever had from any supermarket anywhere. And I mean that full stop.
It's true.
So, unless you get the heirloom tomatoes at like your fancy store, those have good flavor.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't get those, if you don't get them in the season,
yeah,
in the proper tomato season, late summer,
exactly,
they taste like nothing.
Yeah, and that's because whether or not they grew in a place where their season never ends, they pick them early, green, and they send them on up here.
Yeah.
Our food system is so ridiculously unpalatable, it's obscene.
Yeah.
So, whenever I have gotten the opportunity to either grow my own stuff, like sage, for instance, is one of my staples. Anything else, you can put that food, put those spices, put that whatever aromatic thing is into your food, and it will blast it off. Second thing, I do not go light. You know, like you read you're making a big dish. You're reading the recipe, and the recipe is like, yeah, okay, put a quarter teaspoon of this. I'm like, quarter teaspoon. Let's put a tablespoon in. And I just go for it. It's like,
oh, you're a madman.
Oh, yeah. You hold up the little teaspoon measuring spoon. Uh-huh. And then most of these little spices, they have like, you know, little tops with holes in it.
Yeah.
So they don't come out in a nice fluid like stream. And I just keep doing that over the top of my food. Whatever spills goes into it, mm-hmm, until I have a nice little mound on my yeah, measuring spoon. So by the end of it, I've like doubled or tripled the amount that I should put in. Has yet to go wrong.
Wow.
It just, I want the flavor to be big and right in front of your face. I want everything to have that flavor. What is that? Rice? Add something to it. Don't sure, just make rice and say, here you go, put the flavor on top of the rice.
See, nah. You and I are complete opposites on the rice thing.
Which is very fair. Although, one day, I will teach you, and you'll be like, why is this so good? And I'll be like, I didn't flavor anything but the rice. That's it. It's just rice. Flavored rice. Anyway, Alex, we'll talk about this later.
Steamed rice has plenty of flavor.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. You're telling me rice doesn't have flavor?
Rice, A, shouldn't be steamed. It should be boiled in water.
That's the same thing.
No. Anyway, I'm not having this argument.
You know
right
what
now,
steamed rice is.
I
You're
know,
being complicated.
I am not, because I kind of assumed maybe it was like an instant rice kind of thing.
You think I'm putting steam like in a steamer, or rice in a steamer basket and levitating it over water?
Yes. Anyway, I give this tree a very reasonable, but also still an unfortunate, that happens, 6.7. It's getting a low grade because I don't have one in my house right now, and I blame it for not presenting itself to me.
Oh my gosh.
I believe that is victim blaming, and I'm gonna do it to save
wow,
my own skin here. You know what?
You heard
this
it here
is
first,
your problem, you dumb little tree. You did not come to me.
Wow.
And then it just looks at the ground and looks back up at me, incredulous. And I walk away knowing that I am righteous.
This is salacious.
Yeah, I know. I'm just being silly with you guys. mostly, it actually, I have reduced it to such a score because it is not like a big, gorgeous, yeah, large tree.
Any tree that we have to be like, is it a tree, is already doomed in your eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really excited to try the flavor. And I love the fact that it has all these things in it, which is half the reason I want to try it so much, is because I would love to be able to have my food also be explicitly this medicine for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just like eating spinach. You're not just eating this green thing. You're getting a bunch of other stuff that's right, coming along with it, et cetera, et cetera. We could go on. But it's also a good reason, buy high quality food. Don't make it so it's pumped full of stuff to make it look like high quality food. Buy something that is high quality food. It's got all the stuff in it already. You'll set yourself on the right path. Strictly because it's a tree podcast, not a high score.
6.7?
Yes. If this okay, was a culinary podcast,
well,
I put it up probably in the eights.
Well, Casey, the good thing about this podcast is that it's not just a tree podcast.
Thank God.
It's a podcast about other related topics as well. So because of that, I will now give you my score.
We're ready.
The curry leaf tree. I was a little disappointed to find out that it had almost nothing to do with actual curry. Besides that some regions use it in their cooking.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a tree, it's kind of so-so. It's more shrub-like. I don't think that's outrageous to say. We've talked about it.
I don't think it is.
We've had this discussion. It's more shrub-like than a tree.
We've been outright.
However, it gives us delicious food. And in my mind, there's almost no better mission a tree can fulfill.
That is true.
Than to grow delicious food. And for that reason, I give the curry leaf tree an 8.5 golden cones of
wow,
iron.
An 8.5.
Turmeric gold, I say.
This is just, it's incredible. You know, turmeric is just like a root, right?
Turmeric, yeah, I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's also, turmeric also doesn't have a lot of flavor.
Yeah.
But it is true. Loved for its color.
Yeah, its color, mostly because it just gets your spoons to also be that color.
And see, curry is, to a lot of people, or to us at least, curry is synonymous with the color yellow.
Yeah.
That's not even, that has nothing to do with curry. It's turmeric.
I'm just, the things that we sheeple are just accepting.
That is kind of amazing, Casey, the power of colonial groupthink.
True. Yeah, that is fair. Yeah. It has spread to America, and then America has spread its culture to so many other places.
Yeah.
It just is, it's one of those weird things. So I don't know. At least I'm glad you can still go to restaurants who just like shake their head whenever anyone says curry, and they're like, "Yeah, whatever. We'll put it on our menu."
Yeah.
So that you're not confused, but this is not going to be the curry you're expecting.
It does suck. Yeah. Casey, that was our review and our discussion of the curry leaf tree. We hope you enjoyed it. It is time for a completely arbitrary Q&A. We have a special one today, Casey.
What do we have?
I say it's special because you and I, we post on our Patreon. We say, put your questions here.
Yeah.
And everybody who is subscribed to our Patreon at this level gets to post a question. From that group of questions, you and I choose a mainline question to answer here on the free mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. But we also, when we have collected a nice little bounty on those questions, wrong term, we go through and we answer all of them in a Patreon episode so that everybody can have their question answered. And I mean everybody. We made a mistake and we accidentally skipped one of these questions recently.
What?
Not just for the Patreon episode it was assigned to, but even the next Q&A episode, we didn't go back and answer it.
Yeah, that's right.
Make it up to this person, we are going to answer it here and now. This question comes from Ross.
The podcast regrets the error.
Wow. What's your take on calling dense beds of kelp, quote, forests?
Good question.
Would you ever consider covering bull kelp as a tree on a mainline episode? They seem pretty rad to me. I can answer that second question. It's a no.
Oh, what?
We're not covering, okay. Unless we do like Ocean Month.
I do really like the idea of A, doing Ocean Month. B, just deciding, yeah, we're going to call this kelp. And we're going to call this kelp a tree. And
yeah.
C, I kind of like the idea of going through all of that buildup and be like, hey, Ross, no. Thank you very much for listening to Completely Arbitrary. It's just the worst question answered there's ever been.
Well, you know, Casey, speaking of culinary, yes. Speaking of cuisine, rather, bull kelp is of quite a trendy...
What?
Trendy thing.
Is that true?
Right now, yeah. There are companies making like bull kelp pickles.
Oh,
because bull kelp is not just like the sort of foliage, like this, the wavy leaf part.
Yeah.
But like the part that it's attached to is sort of this fibrous, crunchy tube.
So is that like the very base of it? Or is that like,
because
I know there's like the big like bladders that kind of fill with air.
Yeah. And so the part below the stalk,
okay,
is harvested and cut into little rings because it's hollow, right?
Yeah. That's true. Okay. Yeah.
And made people make pickles with it. I bet it tastes great.
Gross.
It probably tastes like a very salty pickle.
Ugh. I hate pickles, Alex.
Well, yeah, you're this is not for you.
That's very fair. So
I would say this to somebody who writes us asking us to do this or that for the podcast.
Yes, okay.
This is not for you.
That I appreciate that. Oh, I see. Yeah, when someone's like, "You guys should really change your entire podcast to do something different."
Yeah.
Understandable. Okay, well, so I'm reading here. This is from is this a good site? This is called Monterey Bay Aquarium. And they say that the kelp forest, so they do give it a forest as an epithet.
Uh-huh.
Then also says that they grow between 30 and 60 feet, about 10 to 20 meters tall.
Starting to sound like a tree.
I was going
to
say, sounds like a tree to me. I mean, what, we just did a tree that barely gets six which is 20 feet tall.
And why does that get to be on the podcast?
Exactly. Why?
Well, now, for a bunch of other reasons, but we're not going to talk about those.
So I've also, it says that bull kelp is an annual seaweed, meaning that it grows from a spore to maturity within a single year. That blows my mind.
Wow.
I want to cover this tree just because it sounds fascinating. Did I just say tree? Oh,
If you look at pictures of bull kelp forests, Casey,
yeah,
that there do appear to be whole ecosystems of animals,
yeah,
living within these bull kelp forests, much like a Tyrrhenian forest.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Now, here is another question. This says spores, which tells me that this is more closely related to like an algae or something, rather than a traditional tree that has seeds. I think everything except for one thing, which shall not be named because, well, one of these days we're certainly going to cover that, is a seed producer, not a spore producer.
Right. Casey, let's move on.
All right.
What do you think about this?
Yes.
Yes, they should be called forests.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I agree.
I think so. Now, the one difference is, obviously, their mode of standing up is a little bit different, but their entire atmosphere is pretty substantially different than the one that you described as Tyrrhenian, which I think is a very fair thing. So are we, should we discriminate based on the atmosphere that you live in?
Ah.
Probably yes.
Are we going to? No.
Probably not. But let's see. Yeah, we'll send it to our editorial board maybe, and then we'll see if that deserves a full-on kelp forest discussion. Maybe we can do another not tree series, and we can just cover things that are very clearly not trees because we like to have a little fun.
I do think we should have a some sort of oceanic month or something.
Ooh, what would we cover? We already covered the mangroves, so that's out.
Yeah, true. But I will say we could maybe make some sort of compromise here.
Yeah.
With the foresters and say, we are calling this a lowercase f forest.
Oh, yeah. Because, we don't want to lose all of our followers on that side.
As opposed to a...
We don't want to get canceled by the forestry.
Yeah, true. I mean, we really don't want to be canceled by the forestry people. No. There you go. We're calling it a forest.
Okay, yeah.
And will we cover it? I would say probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think I would lean towards that. If I really had to make a binary choice, I would say yes. I would not, though, as you already noted, make that choice explicitly one way or another. Because, as you know, we tend to cover things on Patreon all the time, which is a best way to support this podcast, by the way.
But wow,
very
subtle.
Very often, Alex, we do cover things that it's like, well, I want to talk about this, but...
Yeah.
In a technical sense, it does not meet our... completely arbitrary standards.
True. And the Patreon's a perfect platform to talk about those things. Wink, wink, wink.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Ross, for your question. And we're very sorry that we missed it initially.
We are very sorry.
We hope we've made it up to you. If you have a question for us, join the Patreon, as Casey just said, at the $3 tier. That's the Quercus and Alder tier, Q&A. But if you want to support this podcast even more and get bonus content, bump it on up to $5. You get 2 bonus episodes a month or more.
Depending on how many months we skip. Yes.
And how bad mommy and daddy need to make it up to. And above that, of course, is the crown jewel of our Patreon, the Cone of the Month Club. Every month we get a different artist to illustrate a conifer cone. We make stickers out of them and we send them to you with a little info card. And it's a lot of fun every month. Can you believe it? And above that, of course... Arbitrary Plus, our live stream tier. So you get to see Casey and I talk, which is,
it's pretty fun.
It's an experience for some people. We've gotten some comments like, wow, I had no idea you looked like that. I say, thank you.
Yeah. And wait, there's always a positive spin.
Above that, of course, on our Patreon is generous admission. It starts at $20. You can make it whatever you want. It is the most above and beyond way to support this podcast. But honestly, any Patreon tier supports this podcast. Listening to this podcast supports this podcast. Sharing this podcast with your friends, family, coworkers, etc. supports this podcast.
Right.
Simply by existing, you are supporting this podcast.
That is very true.
But we also will take your money if you so choose to give it to us.
It's completely up to you.
Casey Clapp.
Alex Krosen.
Thank you for this very interesting conversation. I always get really jazzed when we talk about, more cultural aspects of trees.
Oh, yeah.
I would say specifically food, just because so many trees give us so much good food.
They really do.
Can you believe it?
I can absolutely believe it. More and more every single time I do one of these shows, honestly, because you never quite know exactly how much until all of a sudden you're like, oh my God.
Let me ask you this, Casey.
Uh-huh.
What Indian food are you going to order tonight?
Ooh, well, I might make some, but it depends on if I can get all these ducks in a row.
Oh, wow.
It would definitely be a paneer, because I love paneer. I think it's so good.
So good. Yummy, yummy, Casey. Let me just say, bon appetit.
Thank you, Alex. Would you get anything similar?
I need to look at the menu.
Oh, God. Okay. You are going to try something new, aren't you? Yeah, this is right. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Hey, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Au revoir. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.